This week's episode is brought to you by our patrons on Patreon. If you'd like to learn more about what our patrons get up to, swing on by patreon.com/doctorandlawyer to see how you can become a patron today. Now, let's get on with the show.
Clanksby Hill, we had a very long, made Norwegian-style sledging.
No, not bad.
We battled down, we hit what must be...
Go and find her.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Okay, you guys want anything else?
Three butter beers and some ginger and lime, please.
Six shots of giggle water.
Pete Earl Grey, huh?
This snake juice is basically rat poison. I've
spent my whole life right here in Lackawanna County.
The drink, I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
And it's the sound of silence.
The problem is, it's not even silent. I just hear breathing and... like a horse over there at the water trough.
As the people watch and pray to the neon god they made.
Hit the note, Cody. Hit it.
You know all the words to that. Yeah. Shake it out of there.
God love Peter Hollins. There's a lot of pop songs
the
I would
sound
not
of silence
I,
is not
I know
Peter
only
Hollins.
Thanks to Peter Hollins.
The Sound of Silence is Simon and Garfunkel.
He did a cover of it.
God bless Peter Hollins.
He did a
God
cover of it.
God bless Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. Peter Hollins was Spider-Man.
Micro story time though. Do you all know the song by Paul Simon, Call Me Al? Do you know that song?
No.
I know Call Me Maybe.
Nope.
Call me out. Call me out. It's got a little... Oh, well, then this story isn't going to mean much to you
okay,
all.
Okay, we're going to call you Al from now on.
This story may not make as much sense then. It has a very famous music video because it's Paul Simon, who's a very small man. And in the music video is Chevy Chase lip-syncing all the lyrics. So up until a very far too late age, I believed that Chevy Chase was Paul Simon. And I did not know that Paul Simon, I just thought it was, you know, a band member, or it was funny because he's just sitting there like playing all the instruments, tapping his feet, and Chevy Chase is doing all the lip syncing.
You said micro story time, and I'm pretty sure you could have just began and ended with, up until a not-so-later age, I thought that Chevy Chase was Paul Simon. Stop. Right there. And I would have held that in my heart for a while.
Was Community really weird for you whenever Chevy Chase was playing a lot of instruments?
It was. I was like, why is Paul Simon doing this? Like, this is kind of a step down from his successful musical career. Hey, wasn't this guy also in Family Vacation? Why did he start acting like a jerk all of a sudden? Who's this Chevrolet Chase? You know,
Paul Simon has range.
He does. Hold on. Allie just messaged me. Do we not have any streaming services anymore? I want to watch a medical drama and I have to pay for all of them.
It's on Netflix.
Is there a streaming service just for medical dramas?
Come here. I don't know what it is.
This is the best.
We don't have Peacock.
I need to know what medical drama it is.
What medical drama is it? They want to know.
If it's Peacock, it's probably ER.
Chicago Med. Oh, it's all the NBC stuff.
William, can you write a prescription for those? Is that
for Chicago Med? Yeah. Yeah. The green script is only good in
I'm
Chicago.
I'm so sorry. So sorry.
Take that to any of the surroundings.
Okay. Yeah, it was all of like My NBC only. Dramas, which all of them are. We don't have Peacock.
And I refuse to pay for Peacock.
I'm not paying.
Isn't
for
that
Peacock.
A big like shared universe, like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Med?
Don't get me started. The most they are the Taylor Swift of TV
wow,
shows.
We're just gonna keep
uninspired,
this.
Insipid.
They also crossed over with the Law and Order universe. So there's just like a whole criminal justice
okay.
Cinematic
whenever
universe on NBC.
Law and Order has a multiverse. That's when I can't. I need to get off of this ride.
You know what?
This is where
I'm keeping this in the final cut because, interestingly enough, we're talking about television tonight again. So if you've just stumbled in to our local haunt, welcome. You're listening to a doctor, a lawyer, a pilot, and a professor walk into a bar. And this week we are back with another edition of Explainer Things.
Now comes the time to explain things on a segment called Explainer Things. You did not ask for this to happen, but it's gonna happen anyways. So welcome to the segment where over explanations are allowed, and dare I say excessive. Unsolicited information provided by Explainer Things. Explainer Things.
I love this music so much. Special thanks to Josh Solomon, who is our composer for that one. This is our first usage of it.
The little whisper at the end. Just
Explainer Things. Chef's kiss. So I have been hounding the three of you about one particular show, have I not?
Hounding. Yes, you have.
No, that's not entirely true. Not one particular show. It's basically the entire Apple TV catalog, The Orville, Chernobyl. Oh, and tonight's topic, HBO's smash hit, The Last of Us. First of all, what do you all know about The Last of Us? A. B. What hesitation have you had in watching it? And C. Why haven't you watched it?
Well, I know it's about, it stars Pedro Pascal going through wilderness areas and saving a small child through said areas.
Yep. There's a strong-willed woman who accompanies him for a little while as well.
And weird alien-looking things just hanging out in the fringes.
Yep.
And that child is the chosen one and has special abilities. It's just in... Oh, wait, no, that was Mandalorian. Sorry.
Yes, yes. Papa Pascal has been typecast, but I am here for it.
That armor would have done him some good. In a few instances.
Right.
Dallas, you are my fellow resident gamer. Yes. Have you had experience with The Last of Us?
I have never played The Last of Us because I'm not a Sony boy. So it was never on anything I could play it on. But
oh, was it Sony exclusive?
It was. We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there.
Anything that's exclusive to Sony that I know that I probably never play, I look up everything about it if it's a like good reviewed blockbuster game. So like I knew everything about it. I've watched tons and tons of gameplay videos. I've watched the storyline and everything. So I knew what was up.
Knew what's what. Yeah. All right. And then William, did you know anything about it except from my incessant text messages in the group chat?
No. Before the HBO show aired, I knew nothing. I knew that it was a game, and then it was a game adaptation, and after the first episode aired, everyone was hailing it as like, oh, this is the best video game adaptation ever, bruh. And so I consumed this bit of HBO content, like I consume most bits of HBO content, through an Alex, just go ahead and preemptively hang your head, mute my mic,
oh no,
pull your headphones out. But I consume it through reaction videos on YouTube and meme Twitter.
You know, that's fair. That's fair. And you know what? I'm going to out myself. I don't love a lot of HBO's stuff. Like, I did not like Game of Thrones. I do not care about House of the Dragon. Like, the prestige television that HBO put... I didn't care. It was a bunch of sex and violence, and I was like, whatever. Wasn't for me. But The Last of Us is probably some of the best television that has come out in, dare I say, ever. Honestly, that's high praise from a person like me.
Okay. Go on.
All right. So the story of The Last of Us and why it has been so impactful. I will give you a brief history. Most people started out with a PlayStation. Then they went to the PS2. Then they switched to Xbox 360, skipped the PS3. And then this is where the fork in the road began. People either stayed on that Xbox trajectory or went back to the PS4. And so what wound up happening in this weird little blurb of time during that PS3 world is that Sony was working on developing some of the best narrative-driven story games that was not happening elsewhere. Okay. So PlayStation and Naughty Dog, the developer, they had worked on the Uncharted series. Our resident Peter Parker, who had just starred in the Uncharted movie with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, that was also a Naughty Dog game.
Naughty Dog is also the developer of the greatest racing game of all time, Crash Team Racing.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes.
As in most progressive topics in culture today, that is not up for debate.
Yeah, suck at Forza.
No.
And Need for Speed.
No one cares about you.
Yeah, and Mario Kart.
Need for Speed Underground, you're all right. Need for Speed Underground can stay, but the rest of you get out. But so Naughty Dog developed a whole bunch of these story-driven games. What wound up happening for the PS3, in 2009, they began development on an unknown game, and in 2011, they actually made the announcement, and it was very interesting the way they framed it, because there was a little girl on the cover, and they weren't really sure how this was going to be received. And then in 2013, they released The Last of Us game on PS3, and it immediately became one of the highest selling video games of all time, and that is for the story itself. It was quite revolutionary. Like, the story, the pacing, the gameplay, it all worked relatively cohesively. So now that you have this understanding of the history of the game, it has a long storied history of being one of the best narrative-driven games, because it was not just a pure zombie game. There was a human element to it. Now, simultaneously, over at HBO, Craig Mazin was working on a docudrama series about Chernobyl. If you have not seen it, you should go watch Chernobyl. Any of you all familiar with the show and or the disaster?
I am familiar with the disaster, and I am familiar with the show being a thing and how, like, almost spot on they got in terms of the disaster, of how they portrayed the human cost of that disaster.
I do promise this little segue is important.
I also know that in Transformers Dark of the Moon, Chernobyl was caused by Decepticons, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that documentary.
No, they touch on that. They touch on that. That's a big, I think that's a full episode of the show, and it looks great. You know?
They even brought a few of them back to actually
Stay on target. Stay on target.
Starscream. Blow up that reactor. Yes, my lord. Then, you fail me yet again, Starscream.
The fact that I actually knew a Decepticon name, I was proud of that. So just
Megatron.
I knew that one. I knew Megatron. I knew that one.
The fact that you knew. Starscream's
Is that an actual Starscream
it is.
Minifig?
It is an actual Starscream from 1984.
Get out. The fact that you had that on standby is terrifying. You're like, maybe this will be the episode. This will be the one. It is. Here he is.
There's only so many times you guys can look at my sound wave in order before someone else got a turn.
He's not wrong. So anyways, Chernobyl.
Well, speaking of Chernobyl, I had this yellow cake uranium sitting here. Look at that.
I got it from the Libyans.
I thought it would come up. I wasn't sure.
My hand has started shaking uncontrollably and has these red splotches. Is this... So Chernobyl, I wound up only watching relatively recently, about a year and a half ago. And what happened was that it came out, I think, in 2017, 2018. Somebody can check the dates. They're going to tell me I'm right or wrong.
No, shan't.
Okay, good, good, good. Thank you. There will be someone in the comments who will be like, actually, it came out in 2020, you idiot. And I'll be like, I deserve that. So I watched it. And what happened was that I was like, well, it sounds like an interesting topic. And I put on the first episode and I watched about 50% of the way through and I stopped and I went, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to watch this with Allie. There's no way I'm going to be able to watch this show and not be obsessed and want to watch it with her. And so I said, babe, I want to show you this show about like a Russian nuclear disaster. And you could just see the seething.
Oh, the life drain out of her face.
Like, she's like, I have no interest in watching. I was like, please, please, just watch the first episode. If you don't like it, I'm going to watch the rest. We binge that whole show in about 3 days. And it's only like 9 episodes.
Right, yeah.
But they're an hour apiece. And so our whole weekend was Chernobyl. We were on the edge of our seats. So Craig Mazin is the showrunner and creator. He also has had a bunch of random cameos in Hollywood and has written stupid things like parody movies. So the fact that this guy went from parody movies to prestige primetime HBO miniseries is a fact unto itself. Okay. So he actually was then asked by HBO to find his next project. They said, whatever you want to do, anything, if you put the same passion into it, we will make it. And so he talks about this on the official The Last of Us podcast. He was a big fan of the game. He wound up meeting the creator of The Last of Us, Neil Druckmann, and he said, I would love to turn your game into a show. And so Neil was kind of on the fence. He's like, this is my baby, you know, like, I don't know if I really, you know, want somebody tinkering with it. But when he heard the way Craig talked about it and retold the story to the creator himself, he realized that this is the man to make the show. And they went in, pitched it to HBO, and they had not even left the office before it was greenlit.
Wow.
So this is a passion project about someone else's passion project. That is my first little thing to have you all understand as explaining. Like, it is made with the utmost care and respect for the source
Cody,
material.
Cody, you were one dice roll away from having Chernobyl energy, HBO money, Crash Bandicoot team racing HBO television show. So this close.
If crash they're team like, racing.
You made Chernobyl, you can make whatever you want. He's like, you know what my favorite game is? Crash Team Racing. And he's like, let's do this movie. All right. And they're like, absolutely. 1,000%.
I would watch the daylights out of that movie.
That's so scary because the SNL skit about Mario Kart.
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have not seen this.
You have not seen this? Oh,
no.
When Pedro Pascal was hosting SNL, they were like, HBO has a history now of making great video game adaptations. Now, get ready for. And it's literally Mario Kart, and Pedro Pascal is playing It's-a-me, Mario. And it's like so self-serious, so absurd. It's beautiful.
But it doesn't hurt matters that it's the Mushroom Kingdom and the main antagonist of...
Yeah, it's the same movie.
Yeah, it's exactly the
well,
same.
Well, that's the really interesting thing. So they went out of their way to stay as true to the story as they could, but they talk about it. They say in all the behind the scenes, like at the end of every episode on HBO, for pretty much every show, they will do the making of. And so it's like a 5-minute like featurette at the end of every episode for HBO shows. And they talk about how anything that was like imperative to keep stayed, but anything that could be improved upon in the 10 years since the game's release, now they're able to go back and say, what if we could tweak that. Stay true to the story, but tweak these elements to improve the actual presentation. It's interesting because when you mentioned like people are ranting and raving about it being the best video game adaptation on all of your, you know, meme Twitter, they're right. But ironically, they also change a whole lot. So,
well, the historic difficulty that video game adaptations have had is because how do you adapt a media where there is choice?
Yes.
And tell a compelling narrative, basically, where there is no choice on the part of the user.
And so that's the interesting thing. Yeah, because The Last of Us and a lot of Naughty Dog's games, there's only a limited amount of choice. You are on rails. It's a beautiful illusion. It's a beautiful illusion. It's not like other open world games where you're able to do whatever you want. It's a sandbox.
So much like reality, there is no free will.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, and this is interesting because you just came out of Dungeons & Dragons, which just released at the time of recording. How would you say they did for that adaptation?
Spoiler free.
Yes. Beforehand, I used to say that the best adaptation I have ever seen was the first Hunger Games movie. From book to screen, I think they did the absolute best job in terms of being faithful. Dungeons & Dragons, a story where you make it up as you go along and you get into all sorts of hijinks that of people who have no idea what they're doing, somehow surpassed that and captured the spirit of the game.
Beautiful.
They captured the spirit of the game better than like a book to movie adaptation where there's literally a script to follow from. I'm not sure how that works.
That's the struggle, is how do you stay true to the source material while still having artistic liberty to make something your own without it just being we had the actors walk in, watch the video game, and then redo it in live action. It's a very, very fine tightrope, you know?
And from what I saw, there were several scenes that were like shot-for-shot remakes of cutscenes in the actual game.
So what's interesting is they asked Pedro and Bella, so Pedro plays the main character, Joel Miller, and Bella plays his surrogate daughter. Her name's Ellie. He has been tasked with transporting her across the country. And we'll get into some of the spoiler talk in a minute. But they specifically asked Pedro and Bella to not play the game, to not watch any of the game, and to make it their own. There were specific moments that they, in the writer's room, took and put it shot for shot in dialogue. But the actual, like, how do we want the actors to actually portray it? We need to make sure that they're not tainted by someone else's interpretation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was very interesting, too.
They loved, the people that created it loved the game, loved the story, loved the content.
Yes.
And I'm jealous because on the Microsoft side, we got the Halo series where they openly admitted that they had not played it. And they were like, we're going to tell the fans to suck it. We're going to make our own story that doesn't follow anything.
Yeah.
When has that ever worked? At some point, do they look at it and go,
George Lucas told people to just suck it.
Well, the thing about Star Wars was that that was a completely original IP. They weren't adapting anything. But when you're doing
touche.
But when you are doing it, when you're doing an adaptation, at the end of the day, when you say that you're doing something different, then do something different.
Yeah.
But if you're going to leverage a very popular IP, give the fans what they want.
And that has been the through line, is that with The Last of Us, how do you change something that stays with the intent of the game, the intent of the story that people knew and loved? How do you give it a facelift without it being unfaithful? And that's where fans are wildly impressed. So this is the section where we're going to start to get into spoiler talk for the game and for the show. And what I will say is that if you haven't had the opportunity to play the game and watch the show. If you haven't had the opportunity to watch the show, but you've played the game, watch the show and play the game. Like they're two different experiences. And this gets to the heart of what is enjoyable about a game is that you are the protagonist in the story. That is something that is not touched by other media on the whole.
So once again, you're saying if you have not played the game or watched the show, stop, go do that, come back. If you have played the game but have not watched the show, stop, go do that, and come back.
Yes.
Okay, well, bye.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
No, I'm saying beware, spoilers ahead. If you've played the game, you're safe. If you've watched the show, you're safe. You know the story. The small tweaks, if you're okay with knowing some of the changes, well, that's on you. If you want to experience them afresh, go watch the show. Go play the game. They're both masterpieces.
We'll be here for you. We will be here for you when you come back.
When the rain starts to pour, we'll be there for you. Like we've been there before.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Go on, Cody. Go on. Keep coming.
We'll be there for you.
No, don't encourage him. No.
I wasn't supposed to encourage him.
No.
It will be there for you too.
I got in trouble the last episode when I made a joke about his singing, and it was like, "Oh, Alex, that was mean. You didn't have to go that." But now I'm encouraging him, and like, "Oh, don't do that. I mean, come on.
Feed the Mogwai. It's okay. It's okay.
Right.
Feed the Mogwai. That is." So we're going to start with the story of the game. We're going to layer the show's changes on top of the game story. And it is about a single father and his brother and his daughter. It starts out just a very normal neighborhood. They are waking up, you know, they're spending time together. It's the dad's birthday. And all of a sudden, that evening, all heck breaks loose. And they have to go on the run. They don't know what's happening. All they know is that people have gone crazy. They are breaking down doors. They are running at people. And in pure zombie horror fashion, they're going for the throat. In the very opening of the show and the opening minutes of the game, as they are on the run, the National Guard has been called in to address this outbreak of who knows what. And the National Guard is now tasked with eliminating any target. Doesn't matter if they look normal. They are going to go crazy. And the fact is, dead people can't be infected. And a soldier winds up shooting Joel's daughter in his arms. His brother comes to rescue them. And that is the opening minutes of the game and the show. You are just in this moment of terror, not knowing what's going on. And what we find out in the opening credits of the game, as they start unfolding it, it is a fungal outbreak. It's based on some real science where there's a fungus called cordyceps that in reality, this is not in game logic, this is true. Yeah. It can actually infect insects and arachnids and actually take over their brain and turn them into a zombie of sorts to help the fungus grow. There's pictures of tarantulas that are basically turned into fungal forms that they can't move. There are pictures of these ants that can't think for themselves because a fungus has taken over their body. This is terrifying because it is just that next like step. And the opening of the show, instead of immediately dropping us into the chaos, they pick up on a talking head segment of a TV show. This interviewer is asking a couple epidemiologists about, well, what do you think the next big outbreak is going to be? This one guy is saying he thinks it's going to be a virus. The next guy is saying it's bacteria. And this third guy is sitting on the couch and he's saying, no, I don't think it's going to be either of those. The host is like, what do you think it's going to be? And he's like, I think it's going to be a fungi. And he's like, okay, tell me more. And basically, the scientist is saying there is no way to stop it. I mean, once it takes over your nervous system, it is it's game over. There's not a cure. There's not an antidote. There's no vaccine that can stop this. Once the train gets rolling, it's game over for humanity. And that is the like opening scene of the show. And it leaves you sitting there going, okay, so what we just experienced over the past 3.5 years, it has happened. It will happen again. It could be a lot worse. And that is a weird way to start a TV show.
It was a bold move making this movie now, or this show now.
Yeah.
Like right off of the heels of, you know,
you know,
our own The Last of Us.
That's setting the stage, right? So we fast forward 20 years. Now, Joel, this dad who has lost his only thing that he cares about in his life, his daughter, is now a smuggler in Boston. The government has come in and has basically turned into a martial law. We control everything. This is a quarantine. And of course, there are resistance groups. They're called the Fireflies. And in reality, they're pretty much terrorists. They're blowing up barracks. They're attacking soldiers because they think this lockdown from the military is just wrong, which now there's a great discussion point there. Is what is right? Is it better to protect people and keep them safe even through drastic draconian measures, or is it freedom even at the cost of human life? So it's just a very nuanced conversation even there.
And not relevant to our real life at all. At all.
Yeah, yeah, we can discuss this in video games and shows because it'll never happen. So wait.
But the real part of where the story, the ball gets rolling, is Joel is a smuggler. He is trying to go find his brother out west, and he goes looking for a car battery. And while he is there, he bumps into the leader of the Fireflies, the resistance group, and they have a young girl, and they tell him, I will give you all the guns, I will get you a truck, but you've got to get this girl to the other side of the country for us. I'm not telling you why, you just have to do it for us. And that is how we are introduced to our other main protagonist, Ellie. This is where we are going to get even heavier into the spoiler talk. But what is unique about Ellie is that she is immune to the fungus. She is infected, but she has not turned. And the Fireflies believe that they can use her to develop a cure. Mm. And so that is why they are going to any length to get her out west, where they have doctors who are out in Colorado. They want her out there so that they can work on developing a cure. And along the way, Joel, Pedro Pascal, this closed-off, hurt man who has done horrible things to stay alive in this completely messed-up world, is now slowly regaining his humanity through love. And I know Dallas knows all about the power of love. It can save the universe. It can transcend time.
You can move little bits of bookshelves if you want.
Keep it going, Cody. Keep it going. Wait, was I not supposed to feed the Mogwai?
You can't, just don't get him wet.
Okay, sorry. It's not after midnight yet, so we can keep feeding him.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
This is where I fully appreciate how difficult it would be to watch this show as a father who has just sat through a pandemic. I am well aware that it would be a difficult watch.
Yeah.
But knowing the two fathers on this show, I know for certain you all would do exactly what Joel does. You all would fight to the death to protect your baby girls.
Yeah, I enjoy a good post-apocalyptic story. William's shaking his head, no. Yeah, this is the two sides of our whole brain at work here. So I like people's thoughts about what they think people in society would do if there was no more rules, if the wheels fell off. Like, the wheels fell off. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to smuggle them. That's the only way to get wheels now. No, so I like to see, like, you know, what would a father or a father-like figure do
yep.
when faced with these things, or like the how do you keep people safe? Like what do you think that looks like? And so I like the world that they have built around all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they did a good job of him dealing with, like, how do you keep this person safe without losing your humanity or losing her humanity? Or
yeah, it's not. And this is where I fully concede that it is not a light, airy, like warm bodies with Nicholas Holt, who's the zombie who learns to fall in love. Like, it's not it's not that kind of it's not Zombie Land where it's like rule number one.
Yeah.
But it's also that the apocalypse is more used as the backdrop to study people. And that can be taken in two ways. People either love it. They're like, wow, this is a beautiful human character study. That would be me. I'm in that camp. And I would say a vast majority of the Watchers have been. And then there are the people who went, I want The Walking Dead. I want zombies. And that is all I am here for. I do not care about the people. And ironically, when I watch The Walking Dead, I am that latter person where I'm like, give me more zombie action, please. I don't care about Coral. Coral.
And then I read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and I'm just there for the love story.
Cody, have you ever heard of the movie Warm Bodies? I feel like you would love it. Right up your alley.
Stars Nicholas Holt. It's about a zombie who learns to fall in love. I think you'd love it. So more spoilers here. In the game, there is a fellow smuggler named Bill. He has his little town on the outskirts of Massachusetts where he has set up booby traps and he is self-sufficient. He wants to be left alone. He's very good at what he does. He's surviving, thriving even. But if you come in and disturb his town, that means you are bringing threats with you or alerting other threats to his presence. So leave him alone. And in the game, he is helping you get to a working truck, and he mentions several times that he has a partner that he used to work with. He cared deeply about his partner. And finally, we find his partner who has unalived himself, and it is revealed that Bill and Frank were romantic partners, and that they cared very deeply about each other, but they had a very rocky relationship, and Frank had been infected, and this was his way of just, he was trying to escape. So that is how the game sets up. The show makes a massive departure and brings in probably one of the most heartfelt hours of television. I mean, it's Ron Swanson on screen, and here he is, sweet and tender, cooking, having a thoughtful relationship with his husband. When you reach the end of an episode where instead of that brief encounter in a game, it is two men, you get to watch their life together, and we now stumble in at the very end, and they are both gone, and they've left you a note, much like the note that's in the game, and you don't even get to meet Bill. You don't go on these wild adventures, but you got to spend a lifetime with two men. I was like, that is the most moving, compelling television I've ever watched.
It just shows that stories oftentimes have a hard time conveying the complexity of people. Oftentimes, like, I've been reading a lot of the High Republic books and the Star Wars canon, and the biggest complaint I have with those books is that they introduce so many characters that sometimes when they include the quote-unquote diversity, oftentimes all you know about those characters are their ex-identity traits.
They're a token.
Yes, and they did not do that here. It was very much, these are two humans who care about other humans. And they did not shy away from that. And it was beautifully written, beautiful cinematography, and it was just a wonderful human story. That was another moment in the show that I was just like, well done. You know, it makes someone care. And that's hard to do.
Yeah. This is like a post-apocalyptic setting. You can strip away all of the, like, everything else except for the humanity is left or lack thereof, and then you can explore it that way. And I think in a post-apocalyptic setting, it's one of the only ways that you can microscope in on the humanity aspect because everything else is gone.
Yeah.
If it's in space, there's still other things, there's politics, and there's like, well, society's still there, so you still have all these pillars that are standing. But with this, It's all gone. Like, there is no more government. There is no more social media. It's all gone. So how do people that are just with people and no rules deal with each other?
The funniest line in that episode is, so Nick Offerman's character, Bill, he's a prepper. And we meet him in the basement. His wall is just lined with guns. He's watching the news on one side, and it's a bunch of, like, Alex Jones-style conspiracies. And then he's also watching the police roll through his town, clearing the streets, clearing homes, and waiting for them to leave, because he knows that they're not here for good intentions. They're not here to protect anyone. He is going to stay and wait it out. So he does. He waits it out. And then that is when he starts setting up his town. Well, later on, once he has met his partner, Frank, they get into this massive argument. And they're out in the street yelling at each other. And Frank yells at him, and he's like, you just believe these outlandish things. You think the government is all Nazis. And Bill goes, the government are all Nazis. And he's like, well, now they are, but they weren't then. And it was just this great moment, because it's like, it's the classic blind men with the elephant. We're all getting a little piece of the truth. We all get a little piece of the puzzle, but sometimes someone's taken it too far.
For me, zombie dystopias and like sci-fi dystopias don't really interest me that much. I watched the first season of The Walking Dead. I got about a couple episodes in and I just kind of checked out there. The dystopias that always get me are the political dystopias, like your Handmaid's Tale or your 1984s or your Brave New Worlds. The ones where you see how oppression takes a toll on the human soul.
There is an episode or two that you would absolutely love. There's basically a cult who live out in the woods in the outskirts of Colorado is where it's implied. And they have a religious leader, very Handmaid's Tale-esque, and they are living off the land, but it's been a rough winter. And so slowly as people start dying, they start becoming dinner. Not everyone is aware. It's a very interesting how do we use our power dynamic to keep people in line for the greater good? I got an Edgar Wright reference in there. That was a little hot fuzz. The greater good.
So this is what, like, Cody, I think you would like the World War Z book.
He would love that book.
Because there's a lot of politics, because it's not like the world failed, but it's like, how did the Russian government handle it? How did the German government handle it?
I watched the movie, the Brad Pitt movie, and my favorite line in that was that the North Koreans got away from the virus because they just removed everyone's teeth simultaneously.
See, in the book, they're just like, North Korea disappeared. We don't know where they went. They're like, did they go underground? Like, have their paranoid prepping for everyone out to get them, like help them survive. We still haven't 20 years later heard from them since it's been over.
In fact, in the show, they've got a cold open at one point. The only tweak that they made in the show on how the virus was spread is that how the fungus was spread is instead of spores, it's mycelium, basically.
Yeah.
Where it just spreads out and branches out, and the substrate, the carrier for this is flour. So all of these products that have flour, pancakes, bread, birthday cakes.
So what you're saying is this is all propaganda to go gluten-free.
Oh, absolutely.
Keto bros yeah. survives.
Where I'm going with that is Jakarta is actually, in the real world, one of the biggest flour production sites in the world. So in fact, many of the flour products that you have on your shelf at home right now probably started in Indonesia. And they start a cold open with this scientist who's brought in by the military in Indonesia, and they're asking her to examine a patient. Finally, the light bulb goes off for her, and she realizes what has happened here, how this person has gotten infected. They ask her, what do we do? She starts shaking and trembling, and she just says, you've got a bomb. Bomb everything. There is no other answer, just bomb. And you can see the general sitting there looking at her like she's serious. And that is what world governments did, is they bombed city populations to stop the spread as best they could. I mean, it is wonderfully complex, but again, I am well aware it is not a light, oh boy, I enjoyed my time watching the zombie show. Like, it's not like The Walking Dead where you're rooting, you're experiencing. I am well aware that that may not be everyone's cup of tea.
The zombies are gross and do gross things sometimes. Especially the big, like, one with the face. It looks like a turtle's penis. You know what I'm talking about? That one.
The clicker?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one.
Well, and this is where the lore of the show is very interesting because, all right, you get infected with a fungus. It starts taking over your body. Are you still in there? Is there any remnant of the person left over in there? And then as it starts taking over more and more of your body, it winds up giving you new abilities in a sense. Like the very first episode has this grandmother, the neighbor's grandmother. She is old. She's ill. She's nonverbal. She can't even eat for herself, but she's the one that goes berserk. And it's interesting because this horrible, horrible thing is taking over her body and ironically is curing her at the same time. And so it's just this weird paradox of like something horrible is doing something beautiful. It's a very complex show, but it's not light breezy.
I'll give you that. And I can appreciate your appreciation for it. The hence explainer things. This is
hence
the,
explainer things, yes.
I want to talk about something some other people may not give a rip, but we care about you.
But I'm going to tell you why you should give a rip.
There's a 3.5-hour episode of Power Rangers coming soon of explainer things, so just be ready.
I have already told you, I will be there for it, and that is because you deserve to be heard out in the same respect that I want to be heard out about The Last of Us. So
yes. I will hear your argument, and I will appreciate your enthusiasm. And if The Last of Us would have come out in 2009, when I was a single man in college, I would have been all over it. Getting to the other side of residency, with some of the things that I've seen, getting to the somewhat other side of a pandemic, being a doctor in a pandemic, I acknowledge that it's good. I have consulted Rotten Tomatoes, I've consulted Metacritic, and I've consulted IMDb. They all tell me that it's good. But my entertainment choices have to balance my reality.
And I fully respect that. I fully respect that. That is why this is called Explainer Things, in honor of Stranger Things. Whereas Dallas and I are like, life's too fun. We got to be sad.
This is going to sound super weird, because I understand where William's coming from to shield yourself from your reality in your Lucky Charms. Like, you don't want to eat where you work. I have to dip my soul into this humanity apocalyptic depression, because watching the news and being a part of things like wears on your soul, and these stories kind of tell thee where the humanity shines through those moments.
I would agree.
As well, okay. As like it plays like a, like I've talked about, like how would you react in these situations? Like there's a mind game that I play while watching these two. Like during the pandemic, I'm on the emergency management team here. So like we had to discuss, how many body bags do we need to order because this is coming? Where do we put food deployment stations? Where do we put extra cold storage for, like, you know, we had to play through the whole book. But then these stories help marry humanity for me into those stories.
Mm-hmm. If this had come out 3 years ago at the height of the pandemic, I would have had a impossible time watching it, even having had played the game
Pandemic.
I bought Pandemic right before the pandemic hit.
I did
and
too.
I started reading The Stand the month before it started. I finished it because you gotta get to the end. You gotta see what happens.
The one distinction I will make is that the story is not about an apocalypse. The apocalypse is a backdrop. The apocalypse is the base layer of the canvas that is being painted upon. Where the show shines is the fact that, A, it is a story about love. What does love look like? And this is from the creator's mouths directly. Love can be pure. Love can be twisted. Love can be completely just taken too far. What does love look like? How does it drive humanity? To what ends does it drive us? It's a very interesting look at people, where Dallas is saying it allows us to look at that microcosm of our individual lives. Like, what does it mean when I say I love my wife? What would I do for her? You know, am I going to go full Bruno Mars and catch a grenade and jump in front of a train? You know, like, probably.
I would push her out of the way of the train and then,
you know, there is another solution.
I push her out of the way of the train and then sacrifice myself. But just standing in front of the train her stilling there just doesn't work in my... Anyways.
Does he not know how trains work? Did he not do research before making this song?
The trolley problem, Cody. You are standing on the train tracks, and you can move the lever, or you can stand in front of it together. Oh, well, this is an easy one.
While holding a grenade.
So, no, and again, this is where I say, this show is not going to be going anywhere. It is, I mean, HBO has already greenlit it for another season, so it will be sticking around for a long time.
I do have a question.
I do have an answer. I hope.
There's two games.
Correct.
There's a longer lead time to make a game than there is to make a show.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was wildly successful. Are they going to outpace the game with more shows?
And get the Game of Thrones phenomenon that happened with season 8?
What I think, judging by who the show's creators are, it is created by Craig Mazin and co-created by Neil Druckmann, the creator of the game. I think with the way that Craig has gone out of his way to stay as true to the spirit of the game, I don't foresee him doing another season unless there is another source material from Neil.
Gotcha.
Or Neil is directly writing the story, in which case that would be turned into the game. So I don't foresee it happening personally. And I also know that the second in this, so this is a bit of a non-spoiler, but adds context. The second game was not as well received because the foundation for the first game and this first season of the show is, how is love used to drive humanity? The second game is a deep dive into hatred and the way it poisons our souls and what it drives us to. And again, it is a deep dive into humanity. It was not as well received for a plethora of reasons, but it is a phenomenal game as well. Haters can kick rocks, you know? People have their own theories, and when their theories are not correct, they get upset. And it's like, well, I thought of it this way.
Are you saying that fans get possessive and toxic over properties that they have no control over? That never happens.
We should do an episode about that. We should talk about that. That would be great.
Now, Dave Filoni, if you don't do Ahsoka exactly as I've plotted it out, you are wrong.
There better be time traveling or I'm out, said Cody. So where I'm saying is, William, in a few years' time, as the world settles, as life grows and you're in a different headspace, I do hope you revisit it. If you do not...
Life finds a way.
If you don't get to that point, read a Wikipedia synopsis. It's a good story, all the same.
Oh, I've watched... So the reactors that I watch, I mean, they react to the entire episode, but
are you watching like Screen Crush with Ryan Airy and like Deep Dive?
Oh no, he's fantastic. No. This is a different one that honestly reminds me a lot of me and Cody, which is probably why I've
watched a few of their videos.
Yeah. So I followed the whole story.
Okay.
And I know some spoilery things, and that was enough for me. Like I kept up on Game of Thrones that way. But I have some hard limits that I've drawn for myself when it comes to my entertainment. And
yeah, totally fine.
I like participating in the cultural conversation around it. But
you have such FOMO. It's FOMO. You're like, I can't miss out, but I'm not watching. I won't
do it. I mean, call it that if you will, but it's almost like I consume it in a Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of way.
Actually, FOMO is one of the symptoms whenever you get infected.
Oh, with the cordyceps. Ooh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's foaming at the mouth. That's where
that's rabies. That's rabies.
But when you get infected,
we take you out back and all yell at
you.
Speaking of, so you had mentioned that cordyceps are a real thing. Okay.
Correct. And like, they are.
It does to certain members of the animal kingdom what it is doing to the humans in this game.
Yes.
I think that's
yes.
what makes the whole concept even more terrifying.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is it's not scary in and of itself. There are moments that are tense, but it's not a horror show. The fear and the scariness comes from the possibility, the plausibility.
I mean, it's like, what actual amount of evolutionary jump would it take for it to get from controlling an ant or a tarantula to controlling a human? Dallas and I actually watched the movie Quarantine in college, and that was about rabies, and it was when rabies had mutated to the point where it took over human bodies.
Yeah. Well, in The Last of Us, the way they explained the jump is our bodies are too hot for cordyceps to survive. But as global warming raises the natural temperature of everything, the cordyceps will naturally become more resistant to temperatures.
Yeah.
So if global warming continues to go up, cordyceps will adapt over time and then would be able to survive in a human host without our body temperature killing it. So like they did a good job of like baby stepping you up to it.
Yeah, imagine a place like Jakarta being the birthplace for it all. That's hot and humid, and now it infects a food source that we all use all the time. Now what happens? And it's very interesting. There's no peer pressure to watch. I respect the limitations that each of us have in either our time or our interests or our personal mental health. That being said, it is phenomenal. And if you don't fall into the camp of not enough time, are interested, and don't have a worry for personal mental health, it's an awesome show, and you should watch it and play the game.
I am excited for video games getting their spotlight in other
Yes.
media. Because we are seeing the renaissance of the video game TV show and movies. Like the Super Mario movie. You know, we are starting to see more video games get their time in the spotlight after years and years and years and years and years of just truly terrible video game adaptations.
The original Mario Brothers movie.
That is a masterpiece.
A classic. That was going to be on my list. No,
and I think you're right. I think yes, this individual adaptation is a little somber. But I think when we have creators who are acknowledging stories that are compelling and they are passionate about telling a good story with that source material, it shouldn't matter if it's a book or a video game or inspired by samurai movies and we gave them laser swords instead of, you know, their traditional swords. It doesn't matter what the inspiration is if the creator is passionate about it. And good storytelling will transcend that media jump. So I'm in the same boat. I'm excited for the future of the genre on the whole. I am excited for the next season of the show.
And I am just ready for that Last of Us Crash Team Racing Naughty Dog cinematic universe. Crossover.
The cordyceps have started infecting bear, dog, fox creatures.
The Naughty Dog cinematic universe.
And it's making them want to race. Which is weird.
And an evil alien comes in and says he's going to turn paradise into a parking lot. That is the real plot of that game.
Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Cody, would you want Vin Diesel to play Crash Bandicoot?
I'm
all about family.
Right, yeah.
No.
He shows up in a muscle car. It's a real gritty reboot.
I mean, are we talking a live action Crash Bandicoot
game? Yeah,
game?
It should be live action, but we take Crash Bandicoot and make him just Vin Diesel. He should probably square up against maybe like Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Okay.
And do we find out that the Fast and the Furious universe and Crash Bandicoot are the same universe?
What?
Like at the end of the next one, he drives up and then Crash Bandicoot like pulls up beside
All
him.
All right. This is how I know it's time for Dallas to tab out. This is how I know. You've had one too many. Tom, you have overserved Dallas. That is, you're cut off.
Universal made the Mario movie, and they also make the Fast and Furious movie, so a Fast and Furious Mario Kart movie.
They did go to space. It's not like it's out of their wheelhouse. They have nowhere else to go outside of going down a green pipe, smoking a green pipe, and then all of a sudden, Mario's there. Wait, James and the Giant Peach, Princess Peach... It's all the same.
James and the Giant
Peach.
The
Last of Us and James and the Giant Peach are in the same universe. I knew it.
James and the Giant Peach is in every cinematic universe. It is the central hub of the multiverse.
It's true. I think we should have them floating behind just a random scene in every single movie. And that's how you know.
Is that a worm? No, that's a cordyceps. Well, no, it's a worm. You're right.
Yeah, it's a giant peach. You're welcome.
I'm just watching it happen.
My name is James.
No.
James.
No.
You fed it.
No.
You fed it peaches. This is what happens.
No, if you give a mouse a cookie.
I don't even like peaches.
Fed it peaches and mushrooms. Who do you not like, mushrooms or peaches?
I don't like peaches.
Oh, I don't like mushrooms now.
And I don't like mushrooms.
I like them both. Not at the same time, but I like them both.
I don't like eating things that are the same classification of things that grow under your toenail.
I don't mind it.
You know what? I'm with you on that one.
It doesn't bother me. I don't mind it.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, I didn't have any more to explain her. That was the explainer was done. And then we just devolved. Cordyceps is evolving and we are devolving.
All right, Alex, I'm with William. It's the cultural zeitgeist kind of the moment, the fear of missing out. It will be on my list at some
point. Yes, I have explainered well.
It will be on my list at some point. I am just knee deep in the most dead horse beaten franchise of all time right now, Star Trek.
Can you imagine taking that sentence out of context? Sorry, I can't watch one of the greatest, most highly acclaimed television shows. I have to watch Star Trek.
I thought you were going to say beating a dead horse and then stop it there.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going to.
I can't watch it. I'm beating a dead horse. Well, anyway, bye, everyone. Good night.
Seriously, it's on my list. I will get to it eventually. Yes. It may be a while.
That's
because
fine.
There's a lot of Star Trek out there. There's a lot of Star Trek out there.
That's their famous line, to infinity and beyond. Yep, that's Star Trek, the Space Rangers, and no, wrong franchise.
I think they're in the same.
Yeah, that's the same universe.
Technically, Buzz Lightyear is a spinoff of, is a parody of Star Wars. Emperor Zurg, it's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's his father.
I don't think technically anything.
But yeah, I watch it. I watch Pedro Pascal on Wednesdays, and I watch an 80-year-old Patrick Stewart on Thursdays.
You could have been watching Pedro Pascal on Sundays, too. It was a, it was a great thing.
I would much prefer to watch Pedro Pascal's adopted child
eat frogs.
Force push a Lizzo's bocce ball through the goal while her Jack Black husband cheers.
I loved that episode, and I've gotten a lot of flack for loving that episode. And I want all of the haters to continue to kick those rocks.
I did not know who Lizzo was until Wednesday. I did not know who she was. I could tell she couldn't act, but I was happy to see Jack Black and Christopher Lloyd.
Cody's over here like, Mr. Cultural Zeitgeist, I will watch Who's Lizzo? And it's a... He's in his own little universe, own little bubble.
I thought this was the best episode of Doctor Who we've had.
You are correct, sir.
It was a Doctor Who, Back to the Future, Star Wars match.
iRobot meets...
That Law and Order episode from Community. It was just a whole thing. Mm.
You're not wrong.
Yep. Sometimes the truth hurts. That was a Lizzo reference.
Oh, sorry. I caught it.
Thank you. Cody didn't. Cody is just right over the head.
I'm with William. Dystopias, you know, I say I'm intrigued by political dystopias, but more in like a watching a car crash kind of way, and it's not necessarily good for me to be intrigued by said dystopias.
I've never taken notes. Like, I will do that when I run my own country.
I'm glad that I have at least explained with enough vigor and vim to have it be put on the list. That is, I have explainered
fair enough.
Well, if that is your end result. I didn't think I was winning over William by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
I knew
have
that.
Yet to see any updates on any knitting projects from the three of you.
Oh, what? Is that Allie calling? Oh, sorry, guys. Tom, I got to tab out. What, William, we're going to pick that one back. Let's put a needle and a pin in it.
Yeah,
So, everybody, this has been a great day, a great episode. It's the great last day because there are zombies right outside my window right now.
What?
It's all going to end.
Julia Child. Bon appetit.
Bon appetit. I didn't even tell that story.
Not this episode. You have before, and if they don't know that story, they got to go back and find it for themselves.
Bonjour.
Cody, hold on. You can't not do the rest of the outro as Julia Child now. You know this, right? The rest of it has...
I absolutely loved doing my Julia Child voice. Follow
I fed
us
the
Patreon,
Mogwai again. You're welcome.
Follow us on Twitter and Dr. Lawyer. Join our Facebook group, The Pub, very creatively named, I might add. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Lawyer. And with that, a Julia Child.
And I'm a fanboy.
I'm Dallas, I guess. I don't even know anymore.
Bon appetit!
That was William. And we will catch you all next week.